This is the one with Rose Tyler.
A shop girl with a sassy attitude.
A plastic boyfriend.
And a mother from Primark.
She meets a man from another planet.
Who tells her to run for your life.
Doctor Who is back, and it's about time.
And it's called Rose.
Here we go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Soybeans, Zandun, wow.
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than who back when? Who Back When?
Welcome to N001 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm JD, and joining me tonight is Ponkin.
Hello! How you doing, JD?
I'm fine, thank you. We are now starting our reviews of New Who,
yeah.
The 2005 revival of Doctor Who. We did a commentary for Rose, which was fairly well received.
Yeah.
And so we thought that...
Thanks for that, by the way.
And thank you for all the feedback.
Yeah, yeah.
If it was genuinely nice feedback, thank you. If it was constructive criticism, thank you.
Yeah.
And if it was just general nasty hatred, well, why are you still listening to this fucking podcast?
But if you are, then thanks for listening. Anyway.
What we've decided on doing is that we will be doing slightly shorter episodes because most of the people who will be listening to this podcast will have seen these. So
yeah, exactly.
What these are is, A, if you have joined during the Matt Smith or even the Eyebrows Capaldi set of Who, then go back and watch, you know, the early stuff, the Tennant, or if you joined the Tennant, even the Eccleston, because I know there are people out there who have only seen Matt Smith.
Oh, really?
I've never heard
of such strange creatures.
I have. Oh, you could hardly remember Eccleston when we were doing
Rose. That's very true.
And I think looking back at Eccleston now, as we go forward, I think we'll probably have a different opinion on him than maybe if you just haven't watched the episodes again. So we advise you to listen to the podcast and then go back and watch the episode.
Sure. Or, you know, watch the episode and then listen to the podcast. I'm not going to say that there's a particular order that you have to listen to this in.
No, in whichever way you feel most comfortable.
Yeah.
So we're now going to go through and do New Who.
Yeah.
So
by the way, sorry, one more thing. If this is your, if for some reason you've just sort of stumbled upon Who Back When and this is the first episode that you're listening to, yeah, don't worry about it. We're going to get more structured with the New Who reviews. But check this out. We're also reviewing audiobooks, the Eighth Doctor Adventures so far anyway, and the classic Doctor Who episodes. So seriously, have a look at those while I listen.
Because there is a lot of Who Back When out there.
Yeah, there actually is.
So
scary.
Tonight we'll be reviewing Rose,
yeah.
Which is the first of the 2005 episodes. But let's start off with a little bite-sized chunk of Doctor Who.
Bite-sized chunk of Who.
A shop girl called Rose wakes up, goes about her day.
She meets a mysterious stranger who totally blanks her.
Then follows her home in a creepy stalkerish way and is hit on by her slut of a mother.
Yep. Together, they investigate a potential invasion of plastic people.
And that's your bite-sized chunk of Who.
You're welcome.
Very bite-sized. Because the big difference between these reviews and the classic reviews is the length of them. These will probably end up being shorter episodes.
Yep.
Mainly because the episodes were shorter.
Yeah, exactly. Rose is what? 40 minutes? 42 minutes?
Yeah, 42 minutes. And,
as opposed to like Web Planet where you have to endure six whole episodes.
Yeah.
Granted, they're half as long. They're like 26 minutes.
This is 44 minutes of fast-paced action.
Yeah.
Whereas Web Planet is 26 and a half hours. Of bleep, bleep, bleep. So,
if you don't know what that means, then have a listen to our Web Planet review.
Yeah, really, have a listen to the Web Planet review. Watch the episode.
Oh, for good. No, for God's sake, please don't. Anyway, yeah. So, you're right. Shorter, action packed, blah, 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 blah. Okay, is there anything that stands out in this episode? This is the first time we're seeing Doctor Who in how many years?
Well, we're talking about.
We're in 2005.
Yeah, we're talking about 2005, and you're talking about the last.
McGann was when? 96?
96, and then before that was 1989.
Yeah.
And you start watching this episode, not high definition at the time.
Yeah.
But what you have is. is a title sequence which looks modern.
Oh, Jesus Christ, yes. A title sequence that is so incredibly fast-paced, so bombastic, that you have seizures while you watch it.
You get to see Billy Piper's name, who we had hardly ever heard of, apart from being a singer, and Chris Eccleston, who's obviously a fairly big British actor. And
this is shortly after 28 Days Later, right?
Yes, I think. I don't know.
Because that's sort of where I remembered him from.
He's been in everything. He did The Second Coming, which was also written by Russell T. Davies.
Oh, cool.
The first thing we see is this girl in bed, and you get a montage of her day.
Ugh, I hate this montage. I genuinely hate this montage. I hate the music. I hate her job, which makes no sense to me whatsoever, because she works in a department store but is not forced to wear a uniform. I hate that she spends time in Trafalgar Square with her boyfriend, who is clearly the biggest dickwad in all of London. Why are they together? Tell me why they're together.
One of them is fairly intelligent, sassy, good-looking, and the other one is Mickey.
Yeah, exactly. There's no... Mickey's attempt at charm, the little element of the Trafalgar Square montage. By the way, Trafalgar Square, we've seen another Trafalgar Square montage on Doctor Who. When Barb and Ian left, we had the little snapshots, photo, or whatever, right? Yeah, end of the chase. We have them in Trafalgar Square, smiling and being, super charming or whatever. Here, we have Mickey's attempt at charm in that tiny little second that we get to see him, is him making a face with a mouthful of sandwich.
One of the things that we get is that Mickey does get better.
Okay.
He evolves as a character, probably...
Yeah, not in this episode, though.
No, not in this episode. Probably more so than any single other person on this show as they develop as a character, maybe apart from Rory when we get... Mickey does develop, and develops quite nicely into someone that you know what they're going to do there. This Mickey is not the Mickey that leaves at the end of Journey's End.
Okay. No, that's true. I somehow remember him being slightly more militant in a way.
And competent.
Competent as well?
Yes.
That is a metamorphosis. Okay.
But the montage sequence here, you are watching it from the point of having seen the episodes after it. And indeed, the 10 years since Doctor Who came back.
That's true. But as I've told you off the record, and I think probably on the record in other episodes as well, I wasn't super fond of the Eccleston episodes when I first saw them in 2005, mainly because my doctor was Tom Baker, and I didn't find Eccleston to be quirky in the right way. And I found the show to be too geared towards children. The pilot itself is too childish in a way. That still applies today. I am slowly but surely realizing that, hang on, Eccleston is actually a fantastic doctor. But I'm still bothered by much the same things as it was then.
But you were comparing Tom, and Tom Baker has
tenure.
Well, he has the Hinchcliffe years, and the Hinchcliffe years were really...
Is that a writer?
Yes, he's a writer.
Okay.
And he's got the middle bit of Tom,
which
is generally considered gothic horror. It's generally considered quite adult in its themes.
Okay.
You have monsters that get killed and turn into Varroxin, which is a highly, highly potent drug when you kill them. Ooh. You know, you've got this sort of... And there are people who are drug addicts in it and everything. It's
very adult themes.
And it's quite, and you've got Irato, who is the green blob monster from Creature in the Pit, who Tom Baker communicated to by giving a blowjob to.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh my god, I'm so looking forward to seeing those episodes.
Right.
But I don't remember that. I'm sure I must have seen it, but I was a child. I didn't know what a blowjob was.
That was the middle of Tom Baker. But then you move on to the Sylvester McCoy years, and you have episodes such as Paradise Towers, which is abysmally childish.
Okay.
You have Dragonfire, which is an insult to most people's intelligence. You have Mel, who is played by Bonnie Langford, who did children's television. You have Sylvester McCoy, who was a children's television actor.
Yeah.
Admittedly, you do have some very adult ones, because you have Ghostlight, which is about evolution. You have Curse of Fenric.
Okay. No, sure. So there is a lot.
But you have a mixture. But the middle of Tom Baker, which is where you're comparing it to, is probably one of the most adult Doctor Who has ever been.
Okay.
But you get onto Rose, and I don't think Rose is necessarily geared towards children. I think there are some bits of it which have been underwritten. So, for example, the part in the armless bit in the house where he's being choked by an obviously fake arm
that he's
holding to his throat.
Yeah. It's like the family-friendly part of this episode.
Why did she take the arm home? Why is she on?
Or it's just dumb. But, okay, you could also argue that this is, in a way, I mean, it's not in a way, it is a pilot, right? For a revival, a reboot.
It's not a pilot. These 13 episodes were filmed as 13 episodes. They were not, there was not a pilot, and then an extra 12 episodes afterwards.
Okay, alright. Okay, I'll take that back. Not a pilot for the studio, but it's a pilot for the viewers.
It is.
It's like, here's the sample. We need now to not convince anyone to get to do another 12 episodes. We need to convince you to watch the other 12 episodes.
And what this is why...
And then they're just making them more accessible.
This is why this is done very much like An Unearthly Child Part 1.
Okay.
Where it is done from the entire viewpoint of the companion.
Okay.
This is filmed from Rose's viewpoint. This is not filmed from the Doctor's viewpoint at all. Like An Unearthly Child Part 1 was filmed from Ian and Barbara's viewpoint. This is Rose, Tyler. This is a shop girl who meets a man. She doesn't know anything about him. She doesn't know the rules of his universe. Like a lot of the people who were watching Doctor Who in 2005, there were two types. There were...
The people who had seen
There were 30-year-old geeks, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Who were watching it, having lived through the wilderness years. And then there was the 10 to 14 to 16-year-olds who had never seen Doctor Who ever.
Yeah.
And this was a sci-fi TV show on a Saturday night. And they had to appeal to both.
Yeah, no, I get that. I absolutely get that. It doesn't mean that I'm going to agree with it.
No. But one of the things you have to remember is Russell T. Davis fought quite heavily that this be a continuation of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Not a reboot.
No. I know. I didn't... I'm sorry I referred to it as a reboot before.
Well, No. The thing is that this could have been so different because...
I know, but they did a fantastic job of keeping some of
the continuity.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, fine. We already know that's one of the charms of Doctor Who in general. Like this nostalgia and this adherence to the legacy of the show. But let's go on with Rose, shall we? Montage ends. She's at work. She works in the department store. Can't remember what it's called.
Henrik's,
bingo. And as everyone leaves the department store, she is asked to go into the basement with the lottery money and hand it over to Mr. HP Source Wilson. But HP is missing, and instead she encounters some mannequins that start chasing her.
First major plot hole of the episode.
All right, hit me.
We know Autons quite well, and indeed later on in the episode we'll know Autons even better.
Yeah.
They have guns in their hands.
Yeah.
Why are they slowly lumbering after her, Black Ninja style? Sort of going, you know, the sort of like zombie from...
We're coming to get you. Yeah.
Rather than just gunning her down and making this episode 5 minutes long.
Mm.
That's my major plot hole.
Okay. Well, there is Dan. When she's down there, I've got a couple of questions for you as well. So she gets locked in the basement. A door just closes. There is no mannequin close to the door. The door just closes on its own accord. She goes back to, oh my god, someone let me out, blah, 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 blah. Then the mannequins start chasing her. Who the shit closed that door, dude?
Okay. In a lot of places nowadays, and this is modern technology.
You have automatically closing doors, you mean?
You have automatically closing doors, but not only that. Right? A lot of these sort of mechanisms are plastic.
Okay, all right.
Right, plastic is everywhere now.
Yeah.
In 1970, where we had the Spearhead from Space, which was the first Auton, right, plastic was fairly new and novel. It wasn't everywhere. Shop dummies, yes, plastic.
Okay.
And that was about it.
Which is why it makes perfect sense that shop dummies became the shape of the Autons.
And correct, there is nothing which is not plastic in this room.
Yeah, I know.
You know, plastic is everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And... I can write the door closing off quite easily as some plastic.
Okay, fine. All right. Anyway.
Plastic door stuff.
Sure. Yeah, that just sort of jumped away. Right, let's go on with the episode, because there are a few things here that I really want. I not necessarily pick your brain about, but just pick apart in general. You okay?
And I'm here to really defend this episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, JD is looking at me with a certain level of animosity. Okay. She is chased down the corridor. All of a sudden, the Doctor turns up. Oh, you know what it is? It's John Connor. He essentially goes, come with me if you want to live. They start running down the corridor. We get to see some fantastic plastic mannequin tits. 5 minutes, 40 seconds in, people. I'll screenshot that for the website. And then the Doctor just leaves her. We discussed this actually in our commentary. He just leaves her because he is in no way considering her a potential companion at all.
No, and why would you?
No, fair enough. She's just a human.
Okay, but let's take a look at this episode from a point of view that we did not know.
Yeah, exactly. Let's look at it from the point of view of the 50th anniversary.
Yes. Which is that he has just destroyed Gallifrey.
Mm-hmm. As far as he's aware, anyway.
As far as he's aware, still at this point in the timeline. He's aware that he's destroyed Gallifrey.
Yeah.
He has been from young John Hurt to old John Hurt, so a massive amount of time as the War Doctor.
Yeah.
He has just regenerated, having destroyed Gallifrey.
Yeah.
why would he take a companion? He is like the miserable, lonely man at this point.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right? And it quite...
And why would you take a 17-year-old 19-year-old girl, sorry, yeah, that has done nothing ever?
No, no, and it doesn't matter. She could have done however much she wants, but he wouldn't know because he's never met her before.
Yeah, she is Dodo. She's Dodo Chaplet all over again.
Yeah, I still haven't met Dodo yet.
At this point, right?
Okay. Later on, Bad Wolf, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. She's going to turn into something very different, but okay, fine. So he basically goes, listen, I've now saved your life. Go on, have some baked beans on toast, you complete primitive. And then he flashes some C4, bobs back into the building, and then the Doctor proceeds to blow up a classic building and set central London ablaze.
Which is something he's done before, considering he caused the Great Fire of London in The Visitation.
Oh my god, wait, the Fire of London?
Yeah, he caused
also
it.
The Fires of Rome?
Yes, he does this a lot. He's a pyromaniac.
Oh, he's a total pyro.
Right?
Oh,
well,
awesome.
Actually, he also caused Volcano Day in Vesuvius.
Oh, that's true.
So...
Volcano Day.
So, so ultimately, yes, he likes setting things ablaze.
Apparently. Yeah, but my point was going to be, this is a dude who... He's going to come to bail out humanity on a number of occasions. Here it's like... Fuck it, there's an antenna. I'm going to battle this one thing that is taking advantage of the humans, but I do not care about collateral damage.
This Doctor starts off as being completely ambivalent to those stupid apes, right?
Yeah, that's true. But okay, so why does he care about what the Nestine consciousness, spoiler alert, what the Nestine is doing? He goes like, yeah, they're primitive and give them a chance.
Because it's wrong. He's a moral creature.
Setting central London ablaze as opposed to... I'm imagining he goes up to the roof. There's... Spoiler alert, there's an antenna on the roof, right? Which is why he's in the basement exactly? What? Anyway, he goes up to the roof. There's an antenna that the Nestine is using to funnel its energy into the plastic. And instead of just dismantling this antenna, he blows up the building. I shitting guarantee you there was a Night Watchman in that building.
No, because he's already dead. Wilson.
Wilson is not the Night Watchman.
Wilson's dead.
Yeah, Wilson is dead, but other people are not. Surely there is someone else there. Because otherwise, what you're suggesting is that Lucy and Wilson are the last two people in the entire building. Like, normally...
If only she was called Lucy.
Oh, sorry. sorry. Rose and HP Source, that they are the last two people in the building. So, Rose, who isn't even meant to be there just because she forgot the lottery money, and then the last person in the building, as a rule, according to you, JD, is a dude whose office is behind a locked door in the basement. That does not seem like the safest course of action. There has got to be... Someone died in that fire. And there's smoke damage, there are people with asthma, there's glass fucking everywhere. Am I the only one who's upset? I'm so upset by this. Ah, are you okay? You look like offended your child in front of you.
I couldn't care less that he's blown the building up.
Okay, fine. All right. Anyway.
And if one person has died to save humanity from the Nestine consciousness, it was worth it.
Yeah, but it wasn't even saving them from the Nestine consciousness. He blew up the antenna. What he should have done
is... He doesn't know that.
No, he does know that.
No, he does not at this point.
Okay. All right. Well, fine. In that case, you're going to correct me in a little bit. Let's go on with the plot.
Yes.
Okay.
I can't wait to find out what your score is for this episode.
Oh, I hadn't even considered a score. Okay. All right. So, cut back to Rose. She gets home in the evening. Her mum is up in arms. Oh my god. Your job just blew up, basically. You can get compensation. And then we find out, her boyfriend turns out, and we find out, oh, he's not just a douchebag, he's also an alcoholic.
Wanting to go to the pub does not make you an alcoholic.
I know, I'm sorry, I'm right? Just trying to rile you
what
up
it, what it does... Well, no, because you're insulting Mickey, who I don't like.
So, I hate Mickey.
Yeah, but I just dislike him.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, hate's a strong word.
He wants to go to the pub and watch the football, right? He is a stereotypical Chavesque boyfriend.
Okay. Whose girlfriend
is a stereotypical Chav.
Also true. Yeah, yeah. No argument there. But she just narrowly escaped a huge explosion and is probably in shock.
PTSD. Oh god, are you okay? Let's go down to the pub. Is there a football match on?
I'm sorry. I take it back. You're totally right. Boyfriend of the year. Well done, Mickey. Gold star.
Yes, I can't stand him either.
But he's just such a complete tool. I don't like him at all. He is dumb. I mean, his character is incredibly dumb. He's not witty. He's a bad actor. The guy himself is not a good actor.
I have to disagree.
You think he's a good actor?
That Noel Clarke is a good actor.
Okay.
You mentioned
in the commentary.
Adulthood and Kiddlehood.
Yeah, I haven't seen
which he wrote.
Yeah, yeah, so he's clearly very talented.
And he was in something beforehand. I think it's called Synchronicity.
Synchronicity?
I think it's Synchronicity.
Oh.
I will actually check
that. That totally rings a bell.
I will actually check what he was in.
He had a cameo in Star Trek Into Darkness.
He had a cameo in Star Trek Into Darkness. And
yeah, but it was a cameo with zero lines. Thank goodness.
Metrosexuality, not synchronistic. He's a metrosexuality.
Okay.
And he was also in 2 years of the revival of Alvija Jane Pet.
Of what?
Alvija Jane Pet.
I don't know what that is.
Alvija Jane Pet was a 1980s drama about a set of builders that go over to Germany.
Okay.
And it's that's quite good. And then it was revived in the 1990-2000 era. And he played the son of someone who died. So okay. The person who played the character had died, so he was amazing.
Right.
And he was quite good in that. You know, well, he can act.
I do not doubt that Noel Clarke is a talented man. He clearly is. I mean, he's clearly a good writer, or accomplished writer at the very least. But his performance here in Rose, it makes me want to stretch my double chin over my face and then punch myself.
The thing about him is that, and I think Camille Kadjuri...
I don't have a double chin.
Camille Kadjuri, who plays... Jackie Tyler.
Yeah, the mum.
They have the same problem in this episode.
Very good actors who are told to be stereotypically rubbish characters or something.
They know Doctor Who from what it was like in the Sylvester McCoy era.
Okay.
So they probably thought that they're filming this sort of kids show. Whereas you have Mark Benton, who plays Clive, the guy that has been researching the Doctor and Rose goes to. And you have Mark Benton, who is a comedic actor.
Yeah.
Who could have...
Who's
overplayed this to hell.
Who paradoxically has a serious role here.
Yeah.
And does it very well, by the way.
Underplays it. If he'd have overplayed it the same as Camille Kadjuri and...
The whole episode would have turned into a parody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. What he does is he plays it quite seriously.
Yeah.
And that's the right tone to do.
Yeah.
When, in later episodes, Noel Clarke as Mickey gets much more serious, Camille Kadjuri goes from overplaying the slut-faced mother to being actually very good in that role because she is...
She is
the epitome of a furious mother when the Doctor brings Rose back 1 year late.
Yeah.
In Aliens of London.
Yeah, but... Oh, yeah, we'll be getting there quite soon. But also, she does caring mother very well.
Not in this episode, later on. This is it. This episode.
This is why this is kind of the pilot. Like, they're still figuring stuff out. Ugh. Okay. Noel Clarke, great.
But not in this. No, I agree with you totally. In this, he's not acting to his potential in any way.
Ugh. Yeah,
and he's in fact irritating.
Oh, he's so irritating. And for many episodes to come, spoiler alert. All right. He pops off, goes to the pub. He finds the plastic arm from a mannequin that Rose brought with her.
That's because she's thick.
Yeah. Why? Makes no sense whatsoever. But he takes it with him. Clearly...
To get rid of it.
I was going to say hand job, but okay. Clearly gets rid of it, yeah. Bobs it in a bin out front. Cut to following morning, Rose wakes up.
Doesn't have work to go to.
Yeah, and the mum basically goes, there's no point in you waking up. Wait, hang on. You should probably tell your daughter, who is a total slob, to get up and
tidy her room.
Exactly.
But then so's she.
No, that is very true. She's at this point walking around the flat in a little...
Pre-mark dressing gown.
Yep.
We in the audio books may joke about Lucy Miller dressing a Primark, right? These people actually do.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, the whole sequence that's set at Rose's mum's place or Rose's place, that
it's
could
amazing.
Be... It could be a Primark ad! Okay, so, bing bong, cut to Doctor arrives. But before he arrives, we hear the cat flap opening, scurrying across the floor, Rose assuming that some stray cat has come into the flat again.
I have a question here.
Okay, go for it.
My turn.
Yeah.
Why did they have a cat flap?
It's just part of the house. When they moved in there was a cat flap in the door. Or possibly they used to... There are multiple plausible explanations for this. Let's say they used to have a cat. Yeah, that's not entirely unlikely. They used to have a cat, installed a cat flap in... This is a council estate, correct? I'm assuming.
Yeah.
It is. Okay, it's a council estate. They will, especially in London, they will not have cat flaps, dude.
Yeah, that was my thought, that they're unlikely to have a cat flap.
Oh, that's very true. This was shot in Wales. Maybe Wales is a much safer place in general than
no,
London.
It's a cat flap plot device. It's the weirdest plot device ever.
Okay, that is fair. Was this launched across the pond as well at the time in 2005? Or was that later on? Because maybe it was like, hey, hang on, let's just write something in that people outside of the UK
will not realize. No, it was not. not thought about.
Okay. For our listeners who don't live in the UK, or in, let's say, people who don't live in London, there are practically, I'm going to say, practically no doors in all of London with cath labs. Not counting, like, suburbia. I'm sure there are some lovely villa suburbs that have cath labs. But in London, especially in a council estate, you will not find it. Yep. That's like inviting a crack den to enter your house.
Let's move on with the plot.
Anyway, Rose goes to inspect. Ah, Mum, I thought you'd nail the cat flap shut. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. Blah, 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 blah. Turns out there are nails strewn across the floor. Clearly something has forced its way in. But as she looks at the cat flap, there is the doctor.
Who is actually surprised to see her.
Yeah, he does not know that she lives there. In fact, he like tests her out for plastic.
Or intelligence. And or intelligence either.
Yeah, exactly. But it turns out, whatever just got into the flat, the doctor was tracking it, essentially. And the reason he's tracked it back to her flat is because she's gotten herself involved in this massive plot.
Exactly. So the doctor comes in.
Yeah.
And is immediately hit on.
Yeah.
By the wonderful Camille Cajori as Jackie.
Yeah, yeah. I love this scene, by the way.
She's just standing there, completely besought by this good-looking, handsome, attractive guy standing
in a leather jacket.
In a leather jacket. And he is just so nonplussed by this entire thing.
Yeah, my note, by the way, is only Rose's mum is dick famished.
Yes.
I apologise.
And,
yeah.
and to be fair, this is New Who and probably the first time.
Yeah.
I really think we need a Camille Cajori soundbite.
Oh. Soundbite?
I agree.
Yeah, yeah. Soundbite?
Soundbite.
There's a strange man in my bedroom.
Yes, there is.
Where anything could happen.
Slut!
Hot!
Anyway, so Rose makes a coffee.
Yeah.
And then he
sees his reflection. This is a pretty fun scene because he's sort of exploring his own body as opposed to the flat.
Yeah. And then he reads a magazine.
Yep. In seconds. In seconds.
And one of the people in the magazine is
an alien.
Is an alien.
Yeah, yeah.
And one's gay. So
okay.
That won't work. She's an alien, he's gay.
I've forgotten that bit. Okay.
And yes, he speed reads a book.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the thing that had gotten in through the cat flap attacks him. And what is it? Bing bong. It's the plastic arm of before.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Why did it come back? Why did that arm come back for Rose?
Well, according to the doctor, it's because the plastic now knows that she knows about the plastic. And therefore needs to take her out. I don't think that's a sufficient argument. If they're going to take over the world, she's going to die anyway. And they're about to make their plan very public. So what does it matter if some chick from a council estate in fake London says, hey, mannequins were attacking me, and no one believes her? Because in a moment, the whole world's going to see mannequins attacking them.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay. I think he's right. Yeah, it doesn't make much sense.
Yeah. Fine, all right. Doc arm wrestles. Bingo.
He does, but, you know, before we get to the arm wrestling, he speed reads a book.
He does speed read a book.
Do you know what the book is?
No.
It's called The Lovely Bones.
Oh, I haven't read it, but that was made into a film quite recently.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and then does he even comment on it? He says, like, oh, a sad ending or something.
Yes, but yeah, that's being made into a film. I've watched that as well.
Hmm.
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Just a small minor aside there.
Okay, well observed. He arm wrestles. As he does so, takes out half of the living room, by the way, which no one seems to remark on.
No, because Jackie's blithering at her.
Yeah, but later on, we get to Jackie after Rose and the doc have left, and there's, like, no comment from her going, like, what the shit happened? I thought you'd been abducted or something. Like, the living room was in shambles. The glass table was crushed. No one makes reference to this.
Or rough sex. Which, knowing Jackie, she probably thinks.
And probably approves of.
Why would she ever mention it?
Fair enough.
Next scene.
Okay, next scene. So, they walk out. Stair comments. Dude, go for the stairs.
Oh! Right, these stairs.
Yeah.
Amazing. They're in the Powell Estate.
Yeah.
And it is the same place that Clara lives.
Is it actually the same place? Have you double-checked
this? No, we don't know where the same place Clara lives.
Like the same place.
But it was filmed in the same place.
Okay.
So, and it is shot in such a way, it's almost the same shot as Clara and Eleven when they go up in the Christmas episode.
Yeah.
So, the question is, does she live in the Powell Estate? Which actually, because Clara has been splintered through time and seen the entire set of time and space, she might well have lived in the same place as the Bad Wolf. You know, she might make that conscious decision. She also teaches a Coal Hill school. Clara teaches a Coal Hill school,
yep.
Which is in London.
Okay.
So she actually might live in the Powell estate in London.
That's amazing.
Which would be truly, truly amazing. We don't know what her address is yet, but I dare say we'll probably find out at some point.
I like that. That's very nice. Okie dokie. They walk down the stairs, and then I think it's time for soundbite number two, because we get a fantastic doctor soliloquy.
Oh, this is the point where you realise this is the doctor. Irrespective of anything that Christopher Eccleston has done.
Yeah.
This is the doctor at this point. And absolutely, definitely, soundbite.
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 The ground beneath our feet is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour. And the entire planet is hurtling around the sun at 67,000 miles an hour. And I can feel it. We're falling through space, you and me.
That's fantastic.
It is. And this sets the tone. This is the more serious bit.
Yeah. This is the soundbite where, when we were doing the audio commentary, we just went completely dead silent.
Yeah, because that single scene sets the tone for Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Because not only is he doing that, that is the start of the acceptance of her as a companion.
Yeah.
By telling that. Even though he tells her to go home at the end of it,
yeah,
that is the start of her acceptance. And it is the first scene where you see Billy Piper as Rose actually acting.
Yeah.
So, no, I think that's out of the episode, probably my favourite scene.
Yeah, agreed. Okie dokie. And, oh, hang on, wait. And the scene ends with a TARDIS sound effect.
And the TARDIS dematerialising.
Yeah, which is pretty amazing. So, she goes over to Mickey. I've got a question for you. I don't know, we may actually even find out about this later on. I'm not sure, but I've got a question for you. When she goes over to Mickey's place, he says something like, oh, any excuse to get into the bedroom? And then immediately turns his head, looks super duper worried, and goes, don't read my emails! Why?
Because he's a slut.
Yeah, I reckon the piece of shit has been having an affair.
As we will find out that...
See, I don't remember these things. Okay.
As we will find out, he is obsessed with Rose.
Okay.
So I really doubt it. Because she is an 8 or a 9.
Disregarding the chaff factor, yeah.
Yeah, disregarding that, right?
Yeah.
Billy Piper herself is stunning.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, definitely.
Disregarding the chaff factor, Billy Piper is stunning. And no offence, Noel, you're not listening to this. If you are...
Well, you might be.
Right, if you're listening to this, right?
How you doing?
Hi, and, you know, I've been defending you. I think you're a great actor.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Mickey, the character who you portray...
See, now you're convinced he is listening. Oh, this is great. Yeah, yeah, keep going. Keep
the
going.
Character that you portray is nowhere near Billy Piper's level. You probably are, right? You are an actor, director, producer... You are, you know, quite good looking. You're up to her level. That's fine. But Mickey Smith is not anywhere near Rose Tyler's level.
Sorry, I had to get a picture of you talking to the microphone as though it were Noel Clark. In case you're wondering, people, that photo will be on the website. Okay, so anyway, yeah. She goes into his room. It logs onto the internet from his computer and uses the super popular search engine, searchwise.net. Why? Are there legal ramifications to using Google or Netscape or whatever was going on in 2005? What was going on in 2005?
Yes and no. But most TV shows, when they were showing something, were using specifics.
Yeah. Okay.
So, no, I can understand that.
All right.
They didn't want to advertise. It's BBC. No advertisement. BBC.
No, that's true. Well, there's BBC News. We do see BBC News. Yeah,
that's not an advertisement.
No, that's not an advertisement, but they could have gone with, you know, GNN,
no,
Global News.
No. This is a BBC program. The most likely thing to do would be have BBC News.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, all right. Searchwise.net, shit balls. Then she finds there's
someone. Who is Doctor Who? The website Who is Doctor Who?
Yeah, exactly. She searches Doctor Living Plastic. Finds a website that is maintained by a dude named Clive.
Brilliant thing. The BBC put the website on the internet.
Oh, that is... Yeah, I'm not surprised.
You go into that and you see exactly what was on that screen.
Nice.
Brilliant. Well done, BBC.
Yeah.
So she drives to the webmaster Clive.
Excuse me, correction. He drives her to webmaster Clive.
Mickey drives her.
Yeah.
Yes.
In his shitty Volkswagen Beetle. Nothing against Volkswagen Beetles, but... I'm sorry. Okay. Fine.
In a car.
Yeah.
To Clive, and Clive played by Mark Benton, as we've already mentioned, playing this actually dead on perfect.
Yeah.
Right?
And Clive, who I believe we established in our commentary, does not know how bicycles work. He, by the way, has the hottest wife ever.
Sorry about the entire wife thing later on, bye.
Yeah.
But Clive, this is at this point,
the point where it could have easily gone into parody, as we said earlier.
Yeah.
And doesn't.
No, that's true. And say what you will about this one sequence, even though it does have some flaws, it is brilliant.
Yeah.
And it adds so much mystery and just conspiracy theories to the whole Doctor issue. He basically talks about the Doctor like some sort of Saint-Germain type character. Says he's immortal. He thinks he's... Does he say he thinks he's an alien?
Mm-hmm.
He definitely thinks he's immortal. He hasn't figured out the time travel thing yet.
No, he hasn't actually figured out the time travel, but...
I can't remember. Has he figured out that he has different faces?
No, because all we see is Eccleston.
That's one of my notes. Why? To me,
because,
that's
because that's all he's found so far.
Oh, okay.
But we do find that, you know, he in the worst episode of Doctor Who ever, it's like about 18 steps below where Planet.
Oh, wow.
Love and Monsters. That there is an entire group dedicated to this sort of Doctor hunting thing.
I've forgotten that. That's blocked out of my cerebral cortex.
Called Linda.
Okay.
Love and Monsters, sadly, does link back to Clive.
Okay.
It ruins
Clive. Oh, that's a shame.
Poor Clive.
That is a shame.
But...
Anyway.
But...
Yeah.
You know, you see him in the, you know, the JFK assassination.
Yep.
And that sort of thing. And
he rescued some family from the Titanic.
Yeah.
Not the only reference to the Titanic in this episode, by the way. Sorry, in the next episode, there's no reference.
You have Titanic, you have the assassination of John F. Kennedy, you have Krakatoa.
That's right.
So, again, more fire and eruptions. And during one of the audiobooks, again, probably one of the worst audiobooks, called Zagres, which was an anniversary one. And Zagres, he claimed to have been accused of the assassination at one point.
Oh, wow.
And that was a McGann.
Interesting. I want to see a Paul McGann, Eccleston... X-Men Days of Future Past crossover.
Oh, God. Wouldn't we all?
Anyway, okay. All right. So while they are in Clive's shed, which, by the way, his super hot wife, totally cool with. His super hot wife is totally cool with her husband being a complete weirdo, as far as she's concerned. A complete weirdo who's just a conspiracy fanatic, right? And who only attracts complete strangers or complete weirdos. Inviting a total stranger into their home is, in fact, really pleased to hear that this stranger is a woman and does not mind not even seeing the woman in question, just having her husband and this woman play in his shed.
If my husband, who is in the house, opens the door to a stunningly good-looking guy, you know, and she is the equivalent of, like, a David Beckham sort of style good-looking guy.
I think that's right. Not David Beckham in a suit. David Beckham...
You know, yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, David casual, you know, underwear model David Beckham.
Casual Beckham.
Casual Beckham, right? Opens the door to casual
Dave.
Beckham.
Casual Dave.
Casual Dave.
Yeah.
Or you know, David Tennant. Or...
Okay.
Right? Or Chris Eccleston in his sort of thing. Right? Anything like this. Right?
Yeah.
He opens the door to Casual Dave.
Yeah.
Right? Who says...
Let's go
I'm here to talk to your husband about stuff he does on the internet.
And we're going to talk... In private. In his shed.
Right?
Where no one else is allowed. And where, clearly, bicycles are not being used properly.
Right. I will tell you that I'm, at this point, single. Right? About 30 seconds after this entire scene, I'm single.
Oh, it's like,
because
it
is the least believable thing in the episode. Because, let's put it one way, right? If I was that woman, I'd be gouging with spears at this point.
Yeah.
Or, at least chaperoning.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a pretty easy thing to do. I don't mean to seem like the two of us are the most jealous people in the world, but I think it's quite reasonable to assume that when she finds out, A, someone's coming to their home, she wants to vet them in some way, regardless of gender, right? Then when she finds out it's a woman, she would probably want to, like, maybe casually offer them a cup of tea just to get a look and kind of look and feel of this woman, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a fucking strange lady. He could have invited a fucking prostitute.
It is a stunningly good pre-mark-based prostitute.
I would almost assume that he's ordered a prostitute for his conspiracy shed. Anyway, all right, so... While they are not prostituting inside the conspiracy shed, Mickey is being a total Nimrod out front. I've got a question for you. One of the neighbors wheels the bin that is shortly going to come into play in front of the car, essentially. Like, onto the sidewalk, the pavement.
Yeah.
Bada bing, this guy, who has a tattoo on his arm, by the way.
I didn't notice.
He has a tattoo. It's nothing important. The tattoo is in no way important. Even though I'm thinking that's a lot of detail to go into this if what is happening is happening. If what I think is happening is happening. Is this dude also a plastic dude?
No, he's a guy who brings a bin outside.
Ah, see, I was going to say, is he also made out of plastic? Because he looks at Mickey super suspiciously.
He's in a car sitting outside being creepy.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Because I was going to say, adding the tattoo, that's a lot of detail to go into a plastic replica. Anyway, yeah, he wheels a bin out, and here's another point that I absolutely loathe in this whole episode. This is for the children. This is slapstick for kids.
I will not in any way disagree with you.
Mickey...
I hate this scene.
The scene is shit. So the bin starts approaching the car. Mickey does not find this alarming in any way. He gets out of the car, assumes that someone is inside the bin, opens the bin, hoping to scare whatever is in there, finds that the bin is empty, and then is stuck to the bin lid and promptly eaten by the bin. Now, the bin is barking and growling, and when it drags Mickey into itself, burps. It's awful. And by the way, no one in the neighborhood notices this at all. But the fucking bin burps. I do not approve of burping bins. I don't.
I don't approve of this scene.
All right.
It's also got the worst CGI in the episode.
Yeah, it's not great CGI. Well, it's actually, okay, it's not bad.
No, it's abysmal CGI.
What? Yeah...
Compared to any other bit of this episode, that is abysmal CGI.
To a point. I think maybe the bit where he gets stuck to the lid, that looks a little bit budgety, but then when it's moving around, that's just not super poorly done, especially it's made for TV. Like, the budget isn't super high for this kind of stuff.
And wait till we get to the next episode.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so then, blah, 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 blah. Rose leaves as soon as she hears that Clive thinks Doc is an immortal alien, tells Mickey, who is now being replaced by a plastic replica of himself.
I have a question for you.
Okay, oh, I know exactly what the question is going to be.
Why is Rose so thick?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This scene, for anyone that hasn't seen it, is a continuation of the For the Children theme. Mm. Because Mickey at this point is A, plastic.
Mega B, shiny.
Looks plastic. Yeah. C, definitely wasn't the person that you left behind. D, acting like a complete and total tool.
E, cannot drive anymore.
And shows how good an actor Noel Clark is.
Oh, wow, I disagree.
Because he is acting like a completely different character at this point.
Yeah, I don't think that's difficult. I think the kind of... I think the acting involved in portraying Plastic Mickey, I think to muster that level of acting, not much talent is required. I'm not saying Noel Clark has no talent. I'm saying he didn't need talent to do that.
No, but he's playing a different character and he's obviously different.
Sure. I reckon either one of us could say.
Well, I could because I've done acting before.
Bingo. There you go.
But...
I'm no Noel Clark.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Although I am Noel Clark in this episode, you know. I'm moving on swiftly from this,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
From this abysmal scene.
Yeah, they go to Pizza Express.
And I think I'd like the restaurant.
Yeah, it's interesting for many different reasons.
Then the doctor turns up.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, sorry, I didn't answer your question. I'm not so sure that Rose is thick. I mean, okay, yes, she should notice that he is completely different, but I think part of that, it's almost theatre. Like, he is more... We perceive him as being more different than anyone in the universe. Yeah. Does. Right?
Yeah, so, it's okay. If you explain to theatre, yes, we are getting an exaggerated version for our pleasure.
Yeah, exactly.
Then they go to a restaurant.
Yeah.
And then the doctor turns up.
Doctor turns up while Mickey is grilling Rose about information on the dock, fires a champagne cork into Mickey's head, detaches his head. Oh, okay, sorry.
Guys, yes, he does do that, right?
Yeah.
With one exception.
All right, give me.
What he does is, as anyone that's had champagne or sparkling wine knows, that if you shake up a bottle and then release the cork, the cork comes out at great velocity.
Yeah.
Spewing behind champagne. And you end
up... It does
up,
not in this case.
Yeah, exactly. You end up with about, you know, a milliliter of champagne left in the bottle and it goes everywhere. Mm. Nothing comes out of the bottle at all.
No, that's true. I had not
considered that.
Because, yeah, well done. Well done. Okay. It goes into his forehead. He spits out the cork. Still at this point, no one in the restaurant, even though everyone has seen this, by the way, no one in the restaurant has reacted to this.
If I was in this Pizza Express...
Not even Rose has reacted, and she's sitting facing him.
If I'm in this Pizza Express, I'm sitting at a table. At this point, I would be beating him over the head.
Yeah.
Because you don't in... Okay, you don't get everyone getting up, but you get some people.
Yeah.
Right? Some people would react to this.
Yeah, yeah.
And even the people who don't react, the others would go screaming hyacinth bouquet-like out of the restaurant.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well done. Nice ref. But yeah. Oh, absolutely. Doc then detaches his head, which is almost sort of a reference back to the champagne cork. There's even a... as he pops off the head, right?
Yes.
And then we learn that Mickey is... this is something we discussed in the commentary. He is true living plastic. He is not like a mannequin. He is actually... he can shape himself in any way. He turns his hand into like a hammer or a mallet.
He is much more living plastic than anything else we've seen.
Oh,
culturally outside of Brave New Town, the audiobook.
Yeah, yeah.
So
oh,
if,
yeah,
you,
yeah.
If you haven't listened to that, go and listen to Brave New Town.
Oh, fantastic audiobook.
Brilliant audiobook.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Doc and Rose, they run off. Doc still has Mickey's head, and we are about to finally see the interior of the TARDIS.
Superb scene. Rose goes into the strange box with the Doctor.
Yeah.
And we get the console room.
Yeah. But before that, the scene is amazing. Before we see the console room, she goes into the TARDIS. We don't see the TARDIS. We see her face.
We see her.
Yeah. She immediately, like promptly exits the TARDIS, runs around it. We know exactly what's going on in her head. She goes back into the TARDIS. Then we see the console room.
And it's the Barbara Wright moment of
Unearthly
Child.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, this, but I think this is even better. I think this is the most realistic reaction to the TARDIS spatial effect that we've had so far.
Go in, what the fuck, go in.
Have a look outside and double check. Then go in and go, wow, holy shit, guys.
And the console room is stunning.
Yeah.
Because we've seen the movie version, which was steampunk. We'd seen...
I like it.
We'd seen the Doctor Who classic version, which is white panels.
Yeah, it's like a BBC garage.
Is ethereal coral.
Yeah, it's not my favourite one. This is your favourite one, I think.
No, it's not my favourite one.
Oh, which one's your favourite?
Sorry, out of New Who,
yeah,
it's my favourite one.
Oh, okay.
Out of Classic Who, it has to be the Hartnell one. The Hartnell one felt like a mysterious machine that transported you to magical places.
Is that just because it's the first one, though?
Yes.
Okay.
But
is there a huge difference, by the way? I haven't seen Troughton yet, but like, is there a huge difference between the Hartnell
one? Smaller and whiter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The console room eventually gets down to being less than the size of this room we're recording in.
Oh, wow. That's weird.
It does, and it becomes much more clinical. The Hartnell console room felt like where the Doctor lived. There was a chair.
Yeah.
There was a coat rack. The Doctor had the food machine. The fornicator. Right, this was where the Doctor lived. There was the barber dentist chairs that they sort of, you know, sat in. It felt like a home.
Yeah, it did.
The Peter Davison console room felt like a workplace. It's like the Matt Smith one does now. It feels like somewhere where you go to pilot a ship.
I like the Matt Smith one.
Not somewhere where you live.
That's true. I really like the Matt Smith one.
It's Pete Davidson console room all over again.
Yeah, it's nicer than the Eccleston one.
I prefer it.
Okay, fair. All right. Anyway, all right. So now we get the whole, it's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside, blah, blah, blah.
Anyway, they're inside the console room.
Yeah.
It's... he basically...
he plugs in Mickey's head.
And explains that this is a TARDIS, short for time and relative dimension.
Singular.
In space.
Nice.
Thank you. Hi, Russell. I can call you Russell, can't I? Because I have watched most of your shows. I loved Queer as Folk. Love The Second Coming.
Yeah.
Love Sarah Jane Adventures. So much like Wizards and Aliens, but never mind. But love Doctor Who. Thank you. Thank you for restoring what has been a great big problem since Maureen O'Brien, as Vicky, destroyed the true acronym of TARDIS by putting the word S at the end of dimension. It is not time and relative dimensions in space. It's time and relative dimension, as said by Susan, in space. Do you know what? Thank you, Russell, from the bottom of my heart.
Okay, so he follows, the head starts melting, and then he follows the signal as close as he can get. Well, he's using the head basically to track the signal of the nesting consciousness, spoiler alert, and he tracks it to, well, the river.
Millennium Mine.
Yeah, they're very close to the Millennium Mine. They rematerialize. We now learn, or Rose, rather, learns that, wow, the TARDIS can travel, and kablamo.
I'm a bit confused here.
All right, yeah, go for it.
For two reasons.
Hit me.
He realizes the Millennium Mine.
Yeah.
Is where they want to go. Yep. They have two choices at this point. Get in the TARDIS and go there, or run through the streets of London in montage.
Mm-hmm.
They run through the streets of London in montage.
Yep.
But not only that, do they not use the bridge over the embankment, which would be quicker. They go all the way down to Westminster Bridge, run across Westminster Bridge, and go all the way back to the Eye.
Wait, hang on. We don't know where they've materialised.
Yes, we do. Because we know where the Millennium Eye is.
Wait, hang on.
They're on the embankment.
They are on embankment, but they're on embankment close to the Houses of Parliament.
Right. If they go, they would have cut about...
Maybe, sorry, people who don't live in London.
Maybe 20 minutes off their journey.
I don't think so. I think they are basically... They're essentially opposite the London Eye, right?
Yes.
Yeah. London Eye, mega close to Houses of Parliament.
Which is where I work, yeah. The London Eye. They go across.
Yeah.
It, right?
It's the Dalek Bridge. It's the Dalek Bridge.
The Westminster... If they go across the Millennium Footbridge, the one by embankment, it drops them on top of the Millennium Eye. So if they'd have just gone across...
Millennium Eye is between that bridge and Westminster Bridge.
No, it is not.
Yes, it's totally there.
No, it isn't.
It's right there.
I work there.
I know, and I've been there a billion times. I live in this city, dude.
Join us in the next half an hour. We'll be back in a minute.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, so now we get the soundbite. Before he gets to the nesting consciousness, he suddenly forgets about Mickey, blah, 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 and in doing so, reveals a little bit of about how he feels about human beings, which is very different to how he feels about human beings today. Soundbite?
Soundbite.
I'm busy trying to save the life of every stupid ape blundering about on top of this planet. All right.
I was fantastically surprised to hear him say this.
Yeah, this is more Tom Baker-esque. Because Tom Baker was a lot alien,
yeah,
right? And he was the most alien. We have Peter Davison, he's probably the most human of all the Doctors.
Okay.
This is probably towards the Tom Baker scale of caring about humanity.
Okay. All right, fair enough. There is another little comment, just want to say this. Before we get into the whole running across the bridge montage that we talked about just a moment ago, he lists various plastic objects that might come to life and attack people, and Rose adds one, namely breast implants. That's amazing.
Well, yes, it's completely different from 1970, where there was mannequins.
Yeah. Is it just me? I was, the second she said that, I was disappointed that we didn't get some woman being attacked by her own boobs. That would have been amazing. That would be absolutely fantastic.
Or a rampant rabbit vibrator.
Oh my god, yes! Oh, actual blow-up dolls, as opposed to mannequins.
This is a different show.
Okay, alright, fine, sorry. Anyway, so now we get to meet the nesting consciousness. The Doctor doesn't want to kill it straight away, even though Rose says to kill it. He has a plan B. He has some anti-plastic with him in a vial, but he wants to give the nesting consciousness a chance, and he quotes Convention 15 of the Shadow Proclamation.
Which will come back to haunt everyone.
Okay. When? I remember you mentioning
Stolen Earth.
Stolen Earth. I remember you mentioning it in the commentary. Okay, I don't remember Stolen Earth. And then we see Mickey still alive. Ugh.
Never mind.
A couple of decimal points off this episode.
Right, and here we go.
Even the Doctor shakes his head when Rose runs off to Mickey. He is, like, visibly shaking his head, just like, what the shit is this?
And then
doing?
We see the TARDIS. And here's my
question.
Because
there's a TARDIS-shaped lift!
Why? Exactly!
Why? They parked it across the river.
Across the river.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And how did the nesting consciousness get it, A, across the river, and B, into an exactly TARDIS-sized and shaped lift?
Yeah, no, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Oh, and also, two mannequins turn up, hold on to the Doctor. Why are there mannequins here? Those mannequins are in shop windows, not underneath the river. There would be, like, a blob of plastic attacking him, as opposed to mannequins that are wearing snappy suits.
But anyway, Rose tries to call Mother. We get montage of death.
Yeah.
Across London.
And there are two fantastic things there. Number one, we get to see the actual handgun, and we hear it, more importantly.
It's the correct sound effect. Yeah. Brilliant. Well done. Thank you, Russell.
Nicely done. And we also get the first proper kill. They blow the freaking face off Clive.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, Clive.
Sorry, but that is pretty brilliant. Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
The bounce it back up. I've already sort of forgiven this episode for bringing Mickey back.
And then three bridal mannequins try to kill Jackie.
They piss me off so much. They really piss me off. They walk up to Jackie in slow motion on, what do you call it? Like they open, like they basically cock their handguns. Yeah. One at a time with like a minute between each. They should have blown Jackie's head off, clean off, within the first 2 seconds. But instead, they make like this huge ceremony of it. Rose does a little Indiana Jones thing.
No. She goes totally Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah, totally. She's like, oh, I don't have any A-levels. Wait, what?
Right.
And
no job, no hope, no A-levels, but she's got gymnastics. It is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yeah. And then she becomes a companion.
Yeah.
At that point, this is the point which she becomes the companion.
Yeah, because Mickey's going, fuck the doctor, let's just get the hell out of here.
Help me.
Right. Not just that, he's also saying, no, leave the doctor.
Yeah.
And then Rose goes, wait, no. You're an actual idiot, Mickey. I don't know if you've noticed this. And then she rescues him. So, obviously, she is now a companion.
Yeah.
Catapults the anti-plastic onto the nesting consciousness. Nesting consciousness goes completely haywire. The signal stops working. And Kablamatron Jackie survives. Because the three stupid bridal dolls have had approximately 5 minutes, literally, not figuratively, 5 minutes, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, to still not have enough time to blow her head off. Pisses me off like crazy. And then we get the ending. Before we get to the ending, though, let's have a look at this map and see who's right, dude.
Not yet. We need to get to the ending first.
Okay, fine.
It's taking so long.
All right, so then we get the ending. Go for it.
The TARDIS appears away from all of the action.
Yeah.
Mickey comes out of the TARDIS carrying like a miserable moron.
Yeah.
And Rose goes to the doctor, I'm sorry, I'm staying to look after my boyfriend. For all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
Doctor goes back in and TARDIS dematerialises. End of episode.
Okay.
Oh, except it isn't.
Except it isn't because he comes back again.
And says, oh, but it also travels in time.
Yeah.
Which will come back for the reason why Rose does it with those words. We'll find out in Father's Day. But
okay.
At this point, she realises that I can go with this great, healthy time traveller.
Yeah. Who's more charming and adventurous and interesting than my chabby rubbish boyfriend.
Or I can stay with Whinger.
Yeah. Who is, even at this point, very poorly delivering lines in the style of, he's an alien, he's not even a human, he is a thing, fuck him. Yeah. All right. No, there's not even a choice here. She obviously goes with the Doctor, end of episode one, kablamo. Nice. And let's just make one other point here. Very clearly, the Doctor he is able to pinpoint to the second where he's going right now.
Yes. Oh, he has complete control over the TARDIS.
Total control. Later on, he's going to be a year late. But now he has total freaking control. Back in the day, he had no control. Later on, he has sort of control. Right now, perfect. 100% control. In fact, later on, when he goes like, oh, I mean, spoiler alert, episode 2, End of the World, he pinpoints the inside of a space station that is in itself not huge at exactly the right time. In fact, he even like checks his wristwatch and goes, nah, 3, 2, 1, bingo, dead.
Yes.
Yeah. So he is incredibly good at that. There you go. Reviews?
Reviews.
Reviews. You go first.
This is not a perfect episode.
No.
In any stretch of the imagination, this is not a perfect episode. But what it does is it reintroduces Doctor Who to a new generation perfectly. It introduces a new companion, introduces a new Doctor. You don't need to know anything that's happened beforehand. It is methodically brilliant in the way it is designed to.
Okay.
Is it the best episode of Doctor Who ever? Dear God, no. But it does a job, and it does a job very well.
Okay.
So let's compare it to the only other thing that can be compared to, which is An Unearthly Child. And I would say that they're comparable. Unearthly Child Part 1 introduces new companion, Ian and Barbara, Rose.
Yeah.
It introduces this alien they've never met before that doesn't really like humanity, William Hartnell, Chris Eccleston.
Yeah.
Introduces the TARDIS in the same way. They go through the doors, you get to see this bigger on the inside than on the outside.
Yeah, but you could argue that you get that with every single companion.
No, you really don't. Some of them wander in and go, oh, look,
It's like something different. Like Dodo.
Okay. See, I'm sorry. I've seen most of Hartnell, and I've seen... Well, I think most of Hartnell? Half of Hartnell. Whatever. I've seen a lot of I've seen Tom Baker,
People wandering in, like, even later on in Peter Davison's series, Turlough wanders in, Ace wanders in, Mel wanders in, right? And they don't have this wonder and excitement that Rose or Amelia Pond or, you know, all of these people have entering the TARDIS.
Okay. The Steve Meister, by the way. Steve.
Yeah.
Steven Tyler.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Okay, go for it. Sorry.
So this does methodically what it needs to do to bring Doctor Who into the 21st century.
Yeah.
So all in all, 3.5.
Wow. Okie dokie. Well, you're giving this a higher mark than I am.
That's not surprising.
No. Okay. There are a few things about this episode that I really like, and there are a lot of things about this episode that I really don't like. First of all, let me just say how I remember feeling back in 2005 when I saw this. So not after the 50th anniversary. This is after having seen this in 2005. This is ages ago, right? I remember thinking, yeah, this is Doctor Who because I remember the characters. I remember the Autons nesting consciousness, whatever. I remember the TARDIS. All of this is good. The handgun, awesome. And it's all nostalgia. The concept is the same. And that is all the different things that bump this up. Of all of them, 90% can be attributed to nostalgia. The reason I'm giving this plus points, if we're starting at some sort of base level of, let's say, 1.0 or whatever, the reason I'm giving this plus points is because of the legacy that it's forwarding. I appreciate that they haven't changed the TARDIS. I appreciate that the Doctor is still a quirky guy. I appreciate all these things. And the Autons and blah, 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 everything that I've just listed. And Rose, great, yeah? And you can totally see this is heading somewhere great. But this episode has tons of plot holes. It has a shitty boyfriend. Not just a shitty boyfriend, a shitty character in general. Mickey. What a rubbish dude. It has the bin scene. That alone cuts a few decimal points off my rating. And it seems very childish. I know a dude gets his face blown off. I don't care. It's still a very childish episode. Really sorry, dude. I'm giving this 2.9.
So not that different from the score I gave it then.
You give it 3.15.
Yeah, a 3.5 and a 2.9, it's not like it's a 5 and a 0, you know.
No, okay,
it's still fairly close. You know, we've been further away than this on the audiobooks, and we tend to agree on every single one of them.
Oh, that's true.
So...
Okay, fine. Yeah, 2.9.
So what do you say? We move on to reviews?
Yes, please. Listener minis.
So, our review for Rose comes from Davis of the Davis Principle fame.
Hello, Davis.
Davis begins, "This episode was the first that was watched for many modern fans of Doctor Who, myself included. For others, it was the first episode they had gotten since 1996, and even then, many didn't like the TV movie, but that's for another review.
Anyways, this being the first episode I saw, I sort of love it. It is a great introduction to the characters, you know nothing about any of them, and you meet a new Doctor and companion all in one episode. Also, I believe this is the first time the audience has met the family of a companion, other than meeting Susan's grandfather, of course. Unfortunately, the special effects leave much to be desired. The whole fuzzy camera thing throughout all of season one is sort of a confusing choice. Also, something just didn't look right with the anti-plastic.
All in all, the plot was pretty solid, and it made for a pretty amazing pilot to a show I have heard so much about. It blew me away the first time I saw it, and I proceeded to watch half the season when I was supposed to be asleep. So I have to rate this story a 4.0. Not the best, but it's a very special episode. And Davis,
you have a huge heart.
I agree totally with you. So thank you very much. If you are not Davis, follow him on Twitter.
He is at Shrubthe, all in one word. Thank you so much for sending in your review, Davis. Awesome. As always, metallic.
This has been Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. If you are not me, you can follow me on Twitter.
Yes, you can.
At Marius Kane.
That's Kane with a K. I have been Ponkin and will continue to be so for the rest of my life. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ponkin. You know how to spell that. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen. Please do subscribe and rate and review us on iTunes. It would mean the world to us. And you know what? Catch you in the next episode.
Goodbye.
Be rad and excellent to each other. Ciao.
Who Back When.